set for argument in case number 85598, matter of public records requests to Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department and other parties further listed in our caption. In any event, are the parties ready to proceed? Okay, great. So as you know, we've set it for argument with the usual 15 minutes per side, but plus, as we've been doing this year on our en banc arguments, an additional 2 minutes per side, which is at 2 minutes uninterrupted at the beginning of your side's respective arguments. Okay, sorry, I was just looking at counsel who at least were listed here, but in any event, so am I clear that I have counsel for Metro over here? Are you okay? So, great, thank you.
Connor Lissa Stovall, I represent my order.
Okay, all right.
I think, as the court knows, I've yielded my time to the Metropolitan Police Department.
Okay, thank you. That's part of what I wanted to clarify is who is actually speaking today.
And Maggie McCletchie, I am arguing on the other side for the Las Vegas Review Journal, Inc., and Mr. Peterson from the ACLU did cede his time to me.
Okay, great.
I believe he might have had a child care for you.
Okay.
Otherwise, I think he would have been here. I have my client, Mr. Lipman, here with me today.
Okay, thank you. All right. Thank you for that clarification. When I was looking and preparing for today, I wanted to make sure I knew which parties were sitting where on this one. All right, then. So as I mentioned, there is 17 minutes per side. Then will you folks be reserving any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Ron. 2 minutes, please.
All right. And so as I'm pretty sure you know, what will happen is, so you're starting at 17 minutes, as I just described. The first 2 minutes, you won't be interrupted. When it gets down to, sorry, you said 2 minutes that you want to reserve. When it gets down to 2 minutes, you'll get the yellow light and the tone that will sound. So you know you're now into your rebuttal time, but the clock, as you know, keeps running down to zero if you're still up there speaking. And on the other side, it'll be going, do you have a cross appeal that you're arguing? Okay, so then it'll be going down, and when you're down to 5 minutes, the tone will sound and the yellow light will come on. Okay, all right, counsel, then please proceed.
May it please the court and thank you. Nick Crosby on behalf of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. The district court's granting of respondent Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department's, or denial of Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department's petition under the Judicial Confirmation Act was wrong and should be reversed. Moreover, the district court's denial of LVMPD's request for leave to amend should be reversed. The department is one of the government entities recognized by the language of the Judicial Confirmation Law, or as it's been styled in the briefs, the Judicial Confirmation Act, Chapter 43 of Nevada by statute. Albeit not as terribly clear as probably we would like to see, but nonetheless, it's the department's position that it qualifies as a municipality under Chapter 43, and also that it satisfies the parameters set forth in the statute for instituting or lodging a petition under that act. And secondarily, the department maintains that the Public Records Act, Chapter 231 of the Nevada Revised Statutes, does not preclude a governmental entity or a public agency subject to the NPRA from proceeding under a declaratory relief action pursuant to Chapter 30 of the NRS or Chapter 43. Now, as I'm sure the court is aware because it's read the briefing, this case presented itself in a rather unique way to the department and really truly put the department in somewhat of a Hobson's choice as to what to do with respect to complying with its obligations under the NPRA, balancing interests of the party subject to those records that it has in its possession. And a third layer is that the victim or alleged victim in the case, as well as the person of interest in the case, both objected to the department taking action consistent with the MPRA in any fashion. Quite honestly, the department found itself in a position of if we do X, we catch the wrath of Y, and if we do Y, we catch the wrath of X. And so the department made a decision to exercise what it believed to be its rights or its ability to access the courts for purposes of getting a determination through an examination by the court under Chapter 43, the Judicial Confirmation Law. It's a 1969 law. Near as I can tell, it's been touched twice in the last 60 years or 55 years. But it lays out an opportunity or an avenue for government agencies those types of entities, government entities are outlined in that statute, to seek determination from the court as to what it can do with its powers.
Hey, counsel, why not just take advantage of the NPRA's statutory kind of out, which allows you to deem the documents confidential, and then just produce what you can that's not confidential, and then just leave it to the other side to challenge that if they want to?
Well, in the normal course, that is what happens. The problem here is we had that third layer I talked about in my opening remarks, is we had people or affected parties or interested parties who had competing adverse interests and objections to us doing that. In the sense, one didn't want us to do anything. One wanted part disclosed, and one wanted full redaction or full disclosure with zero redactions. Again, that was that Hobson's choice I commented in my opening statements, is we had a catch-22. We were going to get brought into court one way or the other, so we truly sought out under that statute to let us get a ruling by courts to do the right thing so we don't mess up. And that was the purpose of moving forward. Now, I know that the respondents in this case have styled the petition from the department in the Chapter 43 action as anything but simply requesting guidance from the court, given the nature of the rhetoric used in that briefing.
So in the petition that you initially filed that instituted this state court litigation, you took a position in the petition about what was confidential under applicable law, under various theories, based on privilege, based on privacy interests, et cetera. So why didn't you simply act based on the position that you took?
Again,
what should or shouldn't be disclosed?
Again, Your Honor, that had to go back to that third layer of concern we had with the parties, had a competing interest into us doing that. Either way, we were going to get stung by somebody, either the respondent Mayorga or Rinaldo. We're going to have an issue with us disclosing arguably extremely sensitive and, as ruled by the federal court, confidential privileged communications versus us not turning anything over and getting sued and then having to pay attorney's fees.
So if you didn't disclose it because you believed it was confidential, then it would be up to the requesters to pursue it or not. And if they did, then you would defend for those reasons.
Correct, Your Honor. That is what the NPRA provides as an option for a requester to pursue rights and records under the NPRA, which have either, whether they have been delayed or have not been disclosed.
And it also provides immunity for Metro to the extent they act in good faith in making that determination. And that includes immunity as to people potentially mentioned in those documents.
Well, yes, the NPRA has the immunity statute for damages, for tort liability, if it operates in good faith, but the department has to go through a lawsuit to determine good faith. So we need to get sued, and we have to go through an entire lawsuit to determine whether or not we acted in good faith, when my reading of Chapter 43 allows us to short circuit in these extremely unique situations. An opportunity to have the court review that, so we don't have to go through.
Why would it be an extremely limited circumstance? The whole purpose of MPRA is to give an expedited relief, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And if you can just jump in and start your own separate action as a debt relief action every time you're served with a request, doesn't that just lend itself to delay?
I can, in all candor, say no. It doesn't. It wouldn't create a possibility that would create a concern for creating delay, but the reality is the department and many other government agencies handles public thousands of public records requests on a daily basis. This is the first time in my 20 years of representing the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department that this has ever been used. Near as I can tell from my research, it's the only time it's been used in the context of public records.
But if we were to bless it, it wouldn't necessarily be the last time, right?
I agree. I can see that, Your Honor. That is a possibility.
What do you do with the, whether you're under 43 or 30, I mean, like let's set that aside. What do you do with the Filarski case out of California? And that's the case that said the exclusive remedy is the NPRA or whatever their equivalent was.
Correct. That's the Supreme Court of California 2002 case. I think that the distinction that's drawn, which is outlined in our briefing before the court, is that in that particular matter, the parties were not dealing with involved interested parties like we have here, in the sense we have a victim or alleged victim and an alleged suspect. I think that the facts in that sense, while I know the court has styled this in its grant of the summary of the stipulation for the parties, that it's narrowing down on that limitation or argued limitation of 239.011 subsection 4 in the sort of the broadening of what remedies and rights are outlined in that particular statute. I think that with respect to the Filarski case, that it is important that there were no competing involved interests in that case, as we have here today. Again, back to my initial comments about where
but
the department found
your point is that our 239 does not make that the exclusive remedy, an action under the NPRA, and indeed in subparagraph 4 of 239.011, it says the rights and remedies recognized by this section are in addition to any other rights or remedies that may exist in law or in equity. Is it your position that DEC relief is another remedy that exists in law or in equity?
Yes, Your Honor.
And do you have case support for that?
I do not have case report for that, but what I look to is the plain language of 239.011, and specifically the subsection 4 obviously states, as you just commented, Your Honor, the rights and remedies recognized by this section are in addition to any other rights or remedies that may exist in law and equity. Now, I know that the...
Not at common law, that's in law or equity?
Well, that is common. That would be common law, would include that, yes. You could. I think that's a broadening language that would encompass whatever common law this court has handed down with respect.
But does that include Chapter 30, DEC relief?
Yes, because that would be a right or a remedy that existed in that exists in law. In chapter.
Also statutory law? Because
correct.
The DEC relief didn't exist pre-statute.
I would argue that when the language used may exist in law or in equity would include the rights and remedies afforded under Chapter 30. And I think that
there are other states that say that their statute is exclusive, that they don't want, as a matter of policy, to let governmental entities go to court ahead of the requester who's either being delayed or denied. Is there any difference between their statutes and ours?
There are differences. Specifically, the main point in the Nevada Public Records Act, there is no exclusion or preclusion for any opportunity or avenue which a government entity can pursue. Now, the NPRA is extremely specific. It's very detailed with respect to requesters' rights, as this court is aware and as respondents have outlined. It's also very specific as to what a responding agency is required to do from a procedural matter, but is 100% silent on what it can't do with respect to pursuing its obligation or pursuing its interests.
Aren't you, in effect, when you say I can go to court on a DEC relief complaint, you've suspended everything. You didn't produce any documents. You said, I need to go to court and get a DEC relief. And that is not among the options that 239.017, I think is the number, gives you. You have like certain things that you can do. You can produce them. You can redact and produce them. You can deem them confidential. You can say, I don't have them, but here's the agency that has them. You know, you have a list of things you can do, but going to court and suspending 239 is not one of those.
Well, I'd argue, Your Honor, that provision are things that my clients have to do, not what they can do. Those are what they have to do. So they either have to respond and produce the records or respond and state when the records will be ready.
So which one of these things did your client do in 5 days?
It did respond, I think, initially that it wasn't going to turn over the records and cited the basis as to why it was not going to turn them over. And then when it was met by a challenge or a response from the New York Times, articulating why the department's position with respect to non-disclosure didn't seem to carry weight, the department looked at that and said, okay, we'll produce in a redacted fashion. Some of these we aren't going to produce, other things because they are still covered by that privilege. And then when we provided notice, because at this time, remember, we had knowledge of a protective order in the federal court across the street that was purported to be covering these documents.
That was only as to the leaked documents, right? Not as to the initial investigative.
That is correct, Your Honor. But with that back.
You didn't turn over the initial investigative report.
No, we did not, Your Honor. Correct. And that is a function of this whirlwind of litigation that we were finding ourselves being sucked into as far as soon as we notified the interested parties as to what we intended to do. That is when we got the barrage of objections. And then subsequently, a preliminary motion for preliminary injunction was filed, as well as a motion for protective order in the federal court, in which we had provided our notice to that
and
court
that
as well.
The whole case got dismissed, but the protective order is still in place, the determination of privilege?
The determination of privilege is still in place, to my knowledge.
And then the protective order dissolved on the dismissal, or is it still in place?
I don't have that answer, Your Honor. I apologize.
Counsel, just a quick question on that. I understand that there's the privilege documents and then the other documents which you had redacted and were ready to go. Is it the practice of the department to notify the people in the redacted documents?
I don't know if I can speak intelligently on the practice of the agency, because the department maintains its own detail. They don't seek counsel every time. But I would say in this case, this is the first time I personally have seen it, but it also is the first time we are aware of a protective order that had been in place, as well as an issue dealing with privilege, attorney-client privilege documents, where a report and recommendation had been issued, identifying those as privileged documents and case-terminating sanction being issued from the federal court, part and parcel with those documents. So again, it created this very confusing and concerning time for my client. So I would answer your question. I wouldn't say that's the normal practice, but I also don't think we've ever had a case quite like this where we had the information ancillary to these issues at the time these requests were coming in.
The federal court did rule that your client, Metro, is not subject to the protective order, correct?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Okay.
And would a DEC relief action circumvent the remedies that are available under NPRA? Is it kind of a back end around it?
I don't view it as a back end around it, no. And I say that because obviously the party would have an opportunity to come in and present its side of the case as well. Ultimately, at the end of the day, what we get is the judiciary, the judges are deciding what is appropriate, which is the same avenue we took under the Chapter 43, which I know that respondents have argued that that's not a true adversarial proceeding, which, of course, the NPRA and this court have talked robustly about the benefit of an adversarial proceeding, specifically with respect to challenging production of documents. But the Chapter 43 does, in fact, provide for an adversarial proceeding, because we are here today on an adversarial proceeding. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Maggie McCletchie for the Las Vegas Review Journal, Inc. I want to start by addressing the statements by opposing counsel that this case was unusual. The only thing really that was unusual about this case is the unprecedented and frankly bizarre steps that Metro took. Metro was certainly not neutral in its efforts. In fact, it argued against its own interests by practically begging the federal court to say it was subject to the protective order. Metro does not usually provide notice to third parties. I don't think it knew before it provided notice that there was a protective order, but the protective order, as the federal court correctly held, could never have bound Metro. It certainly could never have applied to the only documents that Metro had only planned to produce, and that was redacted. I'm sure very heavily redacted, as is Metro's practice, heavily redacted versions of its own records, like its police reports. Those were the only records. They couldn't possibly have been subject to the protective order. Further, while Metro has made much ado about the fact that it could have been sued, not only is it immune from liability for good faith decisions under the NPRA, Metro itself had decided that it should produce the records, as it always does. And by the way, there's almost always victims and potential defendants in police records. This is not unusual because Ronaldo is rich and famous. It isn't actually different. The only documents that are potentially different and interesting are the Football League documents, but again, they weren't going to produce. In any case, Metro made a decision on November 18th. It contacted the New York Times, for example, and indicated that it is anticipated that these records will be provided to you on or about December 1st. It did what NRS 239-0107 requires, and it made a decision, it communicated its decision, but then it didn't do other things that NRS 238.
McClatchy, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
But I can now. How did the RJ end up as a party to this case?
So the RJ had made public records requests as well.
Okay.
And the RJ appeared in the Judicial Confirmation Act. While it's not required, one of the problems with the Judicial Confirmation Act, the RJ did learn of the pendency of the Judicial Confirmation Act. It didn't appear in the federal court. The New York Times expended the resources. But frankly, and ACLU is a party to this case, and they didn't even make a request. And frankly, everybody on the side of transparency in this case is in the case because of the concerns, the grave concerns about what the impact of allowing reverse public records actions on requesters.
Let's say that they had produced the redacted documents from their own files, and then so they had done some of the things that were appropriate. Now, you may quarrel about whether they properly withheld the others or not, but nobody brought an NPRA action. Could they have gone to court for either DEC relief or Judicial Confirmation Act claim had they done something in the way of production? Or would you say that, no, they still can't go to court?
They still can't go to court because all of the provisions of the NPRA work together. It is a very comprehensive scheme. NRS 239-0107 isn't vague or unclear. As the court, I think, asked, it sets forth a menu of exclusive steps, mandatory steps that the government must choose between.
Are you familiar with the Texas case of City of Garland or the Vermont case of Burlington School? They hold opposite to Filarski in broad terms. And they both emphasized that nothing in their NPRAs, as written at the time the issues came before them, precluded a government entity from going to court and seeking DEC relief, whereas here they were subject to conflicting demands and requests and objections, and maybe even in our case, a federal court ruling saying certain documents are privileged. And if you are, why don't those cases control here? Because our act doesn't say anything that would forbid them doing from what they're doing. And 239.011 sub 4 seems to suggest, indeed, that all other remedies are reserved. Do you follow my question? I'm sorry.
I'm not familiar with those cases. I think the parties would be happy to submit supplemental briefing. I do believe that Nevada has one of the strongest public records act in the nation, and it was specifically amended to provide for prompt access. And it's hard to understand how
there's no express provision that says this remedy is exclusive.
That is correct. However, in NRS, when you look at the chat at NRS 239.011, the entire statute and the subsections should be read together, I think. All of the provisions detail a requester's rights when they're suing governmental entities. There's nothing in there. While it does explicitly acknowledge that other rights that may exist in law and equity may apply, it doesn't suggest to me in any way that a governmental entity could have those rights.
Well, but is it appropriate for us to imply an exclusion that the act does not state as a textual matter? I could agree with you as a matter of policy all day long that having the government go to court, and there are states that have statutes that expressly forbid the government from doing that. Ours doesn't, it's silent. And the Vermont and Texas cases say textual interpretation requires, you know, it's for the legislature to execute policy. And if it means to preclude them from access to a DEC relief act, they need to amend the statute and say that. Why are we not at that point here? Because I don't see anything in the statute that expressly says that Chapter 30 or 43 is denied them. They don't have any other remedy than what you're talking about.
So I think I do see things that conflict, starting with NRS 239.001, which states the legislative directives regarding how the NPRA should be interpreted. And that's to interpret it liberally, and now, as amended, liberally in favor of prompt access. And so there's no way that this allowing the government to sue can be reconciled with prompt access.
Well, but if they had produced what they conceded was appropriately produced and then gone to court, the same prompt access would be afforded. I mean, you could.
I think the problem with that is NRS 239.011 does set forth the rules of the game when a governmental entity and a requester disagree. And NRS 239.017 requires the government to engage in an interactive process, essentially, when it is going to deny a records request. It requires them to communicate their decision to a requester. It requires them to work with the requester, if appropriate, to narrow the request. It is then up to the requester to decide whether to initiate a public records action. And it's not just a matter of policy, vague policy, or good policy. It's a matter of what is the policy stated in the NPRA, and how, and there are also specific conflicts, including with the fact that the NPRA does not permit a governmental entity to get fees and costs from a requester, even if they're successful. In this case,
what about subparagraph 4 of 239.011?
That says other rights and remedies?
Yeah, the rights and remedies recognized by this section are in addition to any other rights or remedies that may exist in law or in equity.
First, again, it's within a statute that specifically only deals with the rights of a requester in the context of when, how a requester can sue. So in my view, that was designed to specifically protect the rights of requesters to have other remedies. For example, if the Las Vegas Review Journal got denied a request, but the New York Times got granted a request, they could have First Amendment and equal protection claims. So I think it's designed within the context of NRS 239. When you look at the purpose of the NPRA, as well as the entire fabric of the NPRA, you can't allow a governmental entity to have the ability to sue, to initiate reverse public records actions. And allowing, interpreting that subsection 4, the legislature has met about the Public Records Act many times. It's been amended. It takes the Public Records Act very seriously. It sets forth the rules of the game for when there's a disagreement between a requester and a governmental entity. And it doesn't allow.
Provide for expressly, but it does have this general provision. And I'm really concerned about the rules that govern us as a court, which is we don't add words to a statute and change the meaning. It's for the legislature to change them. If they didn't write it correctly, we have to enforce it as written.
But other statutes can't be, the more specific statute in this case than the Declaratory Judgment Act and the Judicial Confirmation Act is the NPRA, and allowing those,
it's not exclusive.
but it's the more specific statute. Certainly statutes, separate statutes have to be harmonized, right? You can't interpret a one statute, the JCA or the Declaratory Judgment Act, for a second statute to essentially make the NPRA a dead letter. For example, as I was pointing out, a requester doesn't have to face fees and costs, and it gets to decide if it initiates a public records action. Here, for just making a request or disagreeing with the government about its position about public records requests, by the way, that issue actually applies to third parties as well, they could get dragged into court. How is that consistent, or how can that be reconciled with the idea that only the requester can initiate action? How can that be reconciled with the fact that decisions about public records acts, public records are supposed to be made in an expeditious manner? That doesn't apply in the Declaratory Judgment Act or the Judicial Confirmation Act. Public records requesters, they aren't just the Las Vegas Review Journal. They're often average people, and that's the whole design of the statute. you would undermine the entire purpose of the NPRA, the stated purpose. You're not reading anything into it. It's stated by the legislature that this court must interpret the NPRA liberally to further its purposes. But if governmental entities could sue requesters, if requesters would have to be afraid to make public records requests because they might get sued, or if requesters could, if governmental entities could initiate judicial confirmation acts and get issues decided, important issues, proactively decided without even a willing requester, there would be serious issues. Even if the requesters did get served, like in the declaratory judgment action, the requester still might not be a willing requester. They get to decide whether they expend the resources to litigate public records issues.
But you say the choice of litigation is the requester's prerogative exclusively. And
yes.
The act is a matter of policy and structure.
Yes.
Drives that.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Just to give some other reasons, the NPRA also specifically sets forth what the government can do. So in addition to the fact that we don't read rights and remedies into that subsection 4, the fact that allowing it to be read to provide rights and remedies to the government is inconsistent with the entire purpose, stated purpose, led in interpretive directives in the provisions of the NPRA, it's not consistent with NRS 239-0107. In terms of statutory interpretation, when the legislature sees fit to create a menu of options, sees fit to detail very specifically how the government can respond when it gets a public records request, it can't be permitted, it can't be read into the statute. Oh, another option is for them to circumvent these obligations, to sidestep these obligations, and to initiate a reverse public records action. There's nothing in the NPRA that allows for that. The NRS 230-107 is very clear. It says what the government can do. I know that you asked the question, Justice Pickering, about, well, what if they gave the records? But that still would create problems because the requester, again, what if the requester wanted to sue and initiate their own action so they could have the protections of the NPRA? Or what if they decided to sue later and the government had gone and gotten some sort of protective preventative decision? This court takes public records cases very seriously. The legislature takes the Public Records Act very seriously.
Well, let's focus on the football document.
Sure.
My understanding is that the federal court said those are privileged, attorney-client privileged, and they were purloined somehow. If you're in a position, you possess those records and you have a Record Act request to you and you know that that privilege order is in place, what are you to do as the government agency?
The option is very clear and easy. If the protective order, first of all, as the federal court made clear.
Protective order, a determination of privilege.
A determination of privilege. First, I think it's a question for another day, whether that determination is even applicable to the public records context. Certainly the records that Metro created couldn't be subject to that determination. But you do what Metro did. I mean, what it did way back on November 18th, 2021, when it told the New York Times it was going to withhold all those records and that it was going to withhold them and it was withhold most of the records and just produce some on December 1st, 2021. We're here almost three years later. Metro hasn't produced a single record. But I think
they had produced them, though. Would they have been able to go to court when there was no Record Act case initiated and say, hey, we don't want to hold these forever. We want to get a decision here. Would you say that the door is barred to them?
Yes, and here's why. Governmental entities, in my experience, don't advocate for transparency. And again, this court has recognized the need for an adversarial process to determine whether the public should have access to public records. You don't have an adversarial process at all, potentially, under the JCA, and you don't have a willing requester litigant to advocate for transparency in a declaratory relief action. And we're here. The whole reason that Metro says that they needed to do this, to take these extreme, strange steps they took in this case, is because they needed to avoid potential liability. But a requester they sued the requesters. So under Metro's view, they should be able to create real liability, and they sought fees from the Las Vegas Review-Journal in their proposed declaratory relief action. They sought fees. So in their view, they should be able to go after a requester for fees and costs, cause real potential liability, which the average citizen cannot be expected to defend against, for them potentially having liability, which they didn't even actually face. Nobody has sued them. Mayorga and Stovall said they objected to the production of the Football League's documents. They've taken different positions in litigation, but they said, for example, Ronaldo's counsel said that they were concerned about particularly about the Football League's documents. Metro never produced those. So again, they're immunized, as we pointed out. So again, Metro should not be able to sue requesters. It would undermine the entire fabric of the Public Records Act. It would chill requesters. It would undermine the purpose. We shouldn't be afraid to make a request that they might get sued by the government.
Any other? Okay, thank you. Mr. Crosby?
I just did want to point out that counsel in her remarks stated that in her experience, the government doesn't ever advocate for transparency. The irony that we find ourselves in today is that my client was trying to do the right thing on the path to transparency. If it really wanted to get itself in a lawsuit, it would have just not produced anything, said,
counsel,
I'm not
what
getting
about
money.
The holistic reading of the statute as suggested by Ms. McCletchie? Isn't the whole purpose so that ordinary citizens can have prompt access to documents without fear of retribution or lawsuits, where now you're seeking fees against the requesters who have not initiated any actions?
And I certainly appreciate that argument, and I do agree that the NPRA does provide a framework, and I think I said in my opening or my argument that this court has been very clear, and that's a stated purpose in the NPRA. But I think particularly in this case, the argument that somehow this is going to cause extreme delay or deprive a requester of that option or that right under the statute, if you look to the judicial confirmation law, NRS 43.160 states that the Nevada Rules of Civil Procedure shall govern in matters of pleading and practice, which means that the court has the opportunity to advance a Judicial Confirmation Law Act petition as quickly as it would like, which in some cases is within one judicial day. So there's an opportunity for expedition, but I agree with the court. Yes, the NPRA provides that that expectation with respect to how quickly these things get accessed.
So that'd be contrary to then a whole lawsuit where, let's say the JCA doesn't apply and we're just looking at DEC relief. Do you have to go through a whole litigation before you get these documents?
I don't think a whole litigation would be necessary in a DEC action, because I think it's something that could be handled quite quickly on a single hearing. With respect to what it gets presented to the court. It's not a drawn-out litigation where you're dealing with damages and things of that nature. Thank you.
Counsel, hold on.
If we agree with Ms. McCletchie that 011 lays out the rights and remedies of the requester, not your client, so grants them the rights and remedies in that chapter and not to the exclusion of any others, then it would not grant you any of those other remedies, and NPRA would be your exclusive remedy. Is that correct? That's where we're grabbing this expansive language like, oh, and anything else. But we accept Ms. McClatchy's reading, 011 applies to the requester, not to the government.
I would disagree, because nowhere else anywhere in the NPRA does it say you cannot do that, or does it say this is the exclusive option for that's the only thing you can do. It says what you have to do with respect to responding to those documents. It doesn't say you cannot go seek judicial interpretation or confirmation.
I got one more. I know we're over time, but I just got to ask, I think this is an easy question. It's the New York Times had initially submitted the public records request to Metro. Is that right? Okay. And When you filed the petition for judicial confirmation in December of 2021, under this chapter 43 of the NRS, the New York Times wasn't even, nor any other, I don't know if other entities had also made public records requests, but I seem to know that they did. They weren't even named a party to that case, correct?
Correct.
And there was no service needed on them when you filed that case, is that right?
No, Your Honor, that is incorrect. There is a service service requirement that you have to do publication service, essentially, notice.
So a petition
but no, to the individual of interested parties, no. Correct.
The petition for judicial confirmation gets filed. It doesn't name as a party the party who made a public records request to Metro, and they don't get served except there's a service by publication in that case.
Correct, Your Honor.
And in the proposed First Amendment complaint that would have added a claim for DEC relief under Chapter 30, it's still in the proposed First Amendment complaint, doesn't name the New York Times as a party, is that right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And so if a motion to amend had been granted and the First Amendment complaint had been filed, still wouldn't have brought in the New York Times, which was a requester of public records that started this ball rolling.
That's a fair assessment, Your Honor.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.